This is the weather the cuckoo likes, and so do I. When showers betumble the chestnut spikes and nestlings fly, and the little brown nightingale bills his best, and they sit outside at the traveler's rest, and maids come forth sprig muslin dressed, and citizens dream of the south and west, and so do I.
Well, the maids of the Elam Valley don't go in for sprig muslin much. They're more into bright lycra cycling shorts. But we do like to sit outside a pub in the summer, and we're fairly spoilt for choice in Elam. As I told you in an earlier programme, we have four, all within 100 yards or so of the village centre, although the oldest and most picturesque, the Abbot's Fireside, is now more of a hotel, much patronised by honeymoon couples on their way to the continent. I suppose it's really the Abbot's Backside, as it's popularly known, where I ought to go most, because in 1614, when it was a pub, or at least an inn called the Smithies Arms, it was kept by one Richard Hayes, a fact carved on the mantelpiece in the main room.
This old mantelpiece is a wonderful piece of oak carving. In the centre is an angel. On either side crouches a beast of the dragon species, with both tongue and tail spear-shaped, while at the outside corners are representations of a whale, from the mouth of which a frightened little Jonah is just escaping. Coming to the outside of the old house, we see some marvellous carved brackets supporting the roof. At one corner is the body of an animal with breasts, the head of a man, and wings thrown back. At the other corner of the building is a mermaid, but the arm and hand with which she curls her tresses, strangely enough, are twisted round the wrong way. Altogether, it is a wonderful collection, the weird work of a madman.
Well, I think that's a bit cheeky. I'm sure the chap knew exactly what he was doing, but there's no doubt it's a spectacular building, and it's no wonder that on summer mornings I have to perform horrible bearded contortions behind a line of camera-wielding tourists to get my newspaper from the shop next door. On my way back, I usually find that they've turned round and are snapping the Rose and Crown across the road. The Rose isn't quite as picturesque as the Abbot's, but it's very nearly as old. In fact, in the 15th century, the local magistrates used to dispense justice once a fortnight in one of the upper rooms. Doubtless the dispensing of ale downstairs was done more quietly than usual when the big wigs were in session. There's nowhere quite like a pub for hearing the authentic voice of Kent, and generations of BBC programme makers have known this very well.
When I was a boy, living on the Sussex-Kentish borders, most of the local inhabitants, at any rate those over 30 or so, spoke with a distinctive local accent. Even then, the village children and younger people were acquiring the slipshod, bastardised form of Cockney, which is now, alas, so common throughout the home counties. But in those days, it was not necessary to go to the remoter parts of the kingdom to hear a true local accent. Undoubtedly, the best place in which to hear true local speech is in the smaller country pubs, where the older men foregather of an evening, reminiscing of the old days when the pint of beer cost them fourpence. Often the matter of their stories is only equalled by the manner of the telling.
Well, you can tell that was a long time ago if they were remembering fourpence a pint, but he's right about the pub for finding out the news. You certainly get the real stories at my usual information retrieval centre, the King's Arms, around the corner in the square. But if I want to catch jewels of wisdom for this programme from my friends Bert and Vernon, or Jerry or Derek, I have to go inside to the public bar, where the serious matters of the village are discussed. This is no great hardship. In an age when public bars all over the country are being transformed into replicas of Western saloons or ladies' boudoirs, the one at the King's remains beautifully untouched, even down to the creaking floorboard by the door, which ingeniously reproduces the sound of a dropped pound coin when you step on it. This has been known to fool many a newcomer. Took me weeks before I learnt not to hunt around for my lost wealth. But, you ask, what about the beer? Well, of course, the brew at each establishment is good in its own way, but if I have to declare a preference, it's for a pint at yet another pub. This one is actually next door to the Rose and Crown, but being a great deal younger, some mere 200 years old, it's appropriately called the New Inn. But the brewers who operate it have been going considerably longer.
We are the oldest continuously producing brewery in the United Kingdom. We've kept going for much longer than anyone else. They've stopped and started and moved We've been brewing continuously on this site much longer than any other brewery in the United Kingdom.
Though, as you can tell by his accent, Ian Dixon is a North Country man, he's justly proud of the record of local Kent Faversham brewers Shepherd Neame. Their proud boast is that, as it has done since the Benedictine monks began in 1147, Faversham brews its beer with local water. Hold on. I've noticed that Faversham, less than 20 miles away, is more or less on the banks of the Thames. And Thames water, down this end of the river at least, is, well, not very nice.
No, in fact, we have a well which extends down below the brewery for about 300 feet. In fact, it's not so much Thames water as French water, because the substratum beneath the brewery where this water comes from, we believe, extends right underneath the channel.
Well, the water may have come all the way from France, but the most important ingredient, the one that gives the beer its unique flavour, most certainly does not.
We are very proud of the hops used in our beers. All of our hops are, in fact, from Kent, and in fact, many of them are grown within a radius of 5 miles of the brewery by our own shareholders. And so therefore, we truly do only use East Kent hops.
I was glad to hear that bit about the hops, because I'd noticed on my way to see Ian that at least one of our local hop fields near Canterbury was virtually derelict, with cattle grazing between the poles which should have had hop vines climbing up them. Could it be that the Kentish hop industry, the most famous in the world, was in decline?
The hop industry is declining in the United Kingdom. There is a growing element of lager brewing in this country, and many of the lagers now being brewed in the UK demand continental hops. That accounts for a considerable reduction in the hop acreage in Kent. Secondly, in a desire to reduce the amount of infection that can damage hops, a lot of new varieties have been bred, which in fact concentrate brewing power, as it were, in a much smaller number of plants. Thirdly as well, there is a worldwide surplus of hops, because a lot of the third world countries have now discovered that they can grow hops much cheaper than in the United Kingdom.
Not such good news. But not only do Shepherd Neame support Kentish agriculture, they brighten our leisure hours too.
He's now gone about 10 lengths clear. Some pressure will reply down. Two from home and
Point to Point is amateur racing sponsored through hunting. And if hunting ceased, then there would be no amateur racing. And a lot of steeplechasers start life as Point to Point horses.
So it's not flat racing, it's racing over obstacles.
It's 3 mile races over 18 fences.
Yes, we sponsor Point to Point. We've had a tremendous season, Point to Pointing, this season. It culminates the week after next, Tuesday evening. We're sponsoring the meeting at Folkestone, which is the culmination of the Point to Point year. And all of the horses, or many of the horses we've seen running and doing so well for the in the last 2 or 3 months, we'll be expecting great things at Folkestone on Tuesday evening.
Well, now it is Tuesday, and here we are at Folkestone Racecourse, waiting for the 6:50 race to begin. That's a race sponsored by Shepherd Neame. And to my mind, there's only one horse I can possibly put next month's programme budget on. It's called the Lager Lout. Let's see what the form book says. Lying in second and holding every chance when falling. Oh dear. When falling, 2 on his latest start, restricted open event won by Magical Morris at Bexhill last month. Must go very close soon.
Seven and two, five,
700
and two.
7 and 2,
Lagerlout.
Yes,
7 and 2, Lager.
6, 5, 2.
Can I have £5
six,
on
Lagerlout,
please?
You certainly can. 17.5 to 5, the Lagerlout, down to Mike.
101 pounds. Yes, well, I did tell a lie about betting the programme budget. But nevertheless, I was still biting my nails all through the race. That was my fiver at stake.
Lagerlout is over that one safely now as they come inside the last 150 yards. It's the Lagerlout going clear. Lake Tiberias and Watergate battling it out for second place, but it's the Lagerlout, despite some jumping out to the left, has come home clear of Lake Tiberias and Watergate.
Well, that wasn't too terrific an amount of winnings, but enough to supply me with a pint of beer. And where better to go than a pub called the Flying Horse? But hang on, there are people here before me. Very musical people and very colourful people. They're all dressed in white trousers, bells hung round their knees, red waistcoats with, yes, a white horse, the White Horse of Kent, embroidered on the back. And there is a white horse, a very frightening-looking white horse. He's going round amongst the spectators, snapping his white jaws at them. And he's accompanied by a man with a bag, asking for money. I must find out about this.
All was to be revealed. The red and white gang were the East Kent Morris men, dancing away for charity causes, and the horse, nicknamed Invictor, after our Kentish motto, Unconquered, was there to assist.
The horse originates from Denmark. When the Danish invasion of, particularly of East Kent, happened, the Danes brought with them the custom of dressing up in animal skins, which was usually a horse, usually a horse's skin with a horse's skull. And that was the origin of the original East Kent horse, which was taken over by people who then used it in the, I suppose, the Middle Ages for frightening people at Christmas and demanding free drinks.
There is an ancient saying that goes, if ye the hodden horse do feed, throughout the year ye shall not need. So copper coins are the realm, silver coins of the realm, gold cards of the realm,
access Barclay, Visa, American Express,
all go down the same way. He never suffers from indigestion.
Invictor turned out to be operated inside by a 9-year-old boy, but despite that, or perhaps because of that, he was pretty frightening, and I was rather cautious about being introduced to him.
This is Invictor.
How do you do, Invictor?
He is a bit fancier than a lot of the horses, which were originally, they were very simple, wooden, not very well carved shapes. But Invictor was made in the 1950s, and he is a bit of a transition between a hodden horse and a Morris horse, in that he now comes around with the Morris side and he collects money and he interacts with the dancers.
He's got very fearsome jaws. Ooh, they snap.
They snap. Ooh. He also collects money.
Ah, collects microphones too.
He's not quite as fearsome as some hobby horses. This one, he has a little rhyme that goes with him, which is, if ye the hodden horse doth feed, throughout the year thou shalt not need.
Oh,
which is always a good way of collecting for charity. He's our insurance policy. And I'm afraid at the moment I must go because we are supposed to be dancing.
Well, good luck with your money collecting, Victor.
And he will be round to see you in a minute.
I'm afraid he will, yes. Bye-bye.
Here we go.